All right. Now, as far as the synthesis step goes, we have drugs that can increase transmitter synthesis, decrease transmitter synthesis, or we can cause something to be produced that's more effective. As far as the storage goes, we can interrupt storage and cause less to be stored. We don't really have the ability to make more be stored. And then we have drugs that can promote release or inhibit release. And then finally, the receptor binding. We have drugs that can bind directly to the receptor and activate it. And from yesterday's lecture, we'd call that an agonist. We also have ones that can do the opposite, and we would call those antagonists. And then we also have ones that bind to the receptor and then upregulate or downregulate the receptor, but don't directly activate it, and that's no special name for that. All right, as far as termination phase, we have drugs that can block reuptake. We also have drugs that can inhibit the enzymatic degradation. Now, both of these things are going to cause the same thing to happen, and that is more neurotransmitter. So if we block reuptake, what happens to the amount of neurotransmitter?
Increases.
Say the opposite.
It increases.
If we block it from being broken down, what happens to the amount of neurotransmitter? It increases. So when we talk about the termination phase, reuptake and enzymatic degradation, what is the effect of our drugs? More neurotransmitter. All right, receptor types and selectivity. Now, the question is, in terms of selectivity, does a drug bind to only one receptor, or does it bind to more than one receptor? So, for example, we have two kinds of receptors, beta 1 and beta 2, and we have drugs that are more selective for beta 1 and don't affect beta 2, and we also have drugs that will affect both beta 1 and beta 2. Which one is going to have more side effects? The one that affects both. Now, there's also something called physiologic selectivity, which is the idea that you can have one receptor that appears in multiple places in the body and does multiple things. So, for example, beta receptors appear in your heart and also in your kidney. So if you have beta 1 stimulation, it's going to affect not only a heart, it'll also affect the kidney. So no matter how selective your drug is, because the receptor appears in more than one place, it's going to affect more than one place. All right, so we talked about the division between central and peripheral. So let's talk a little bit more about the peripheral nervous system in detail. So the peripheral nervous system can be divided into two functional divisions, autonomic and somatic. What does the autonomic nervous system do? Okay, so involuntary things like what? Like this?
Digestion.
Boop! Oh, wait, that was Ally McBeal a long time ago. We're not talking about Tourette's syndrome. What do we mean when we say involuntary processes? Okay. So homeostatic functions that are responsible for keeping you alive, making sure your heart beats on time, making sure you breathe on time, blinking when your eyes are dry, vasodilation, vasoconstriction, things that you really aren't aware of for the most part, but they happen because your body knows it needs to happen. Now, what is the somatic nervous system in charge of? Okay, so voluntary movement, somatic muscles. So all of you who are taking notes right now, your hands are involved in somatic movement. Yay! Now, the autonomic system can in turn be divided into sympathetic and parasympathetic. What does the sympathetic system do? Okay. So what's the term that it's associated with? So fight or flight. So we typically associate the sympathetic nervous system with things that get you hopped up and amped up and ready for action. Or just really, really nervous. Oh my gosh, I have butterflies in my stomach. My hands can't stop shaking. That's the sympathetic nervous system. Its job is to speed our body up and get us ready for action. The other side is called the parasympathetic. And what's it in charge of? Slow down, relax. Take a load off. Here, have some food. So it's in charge of digestion, charge of kind of slowing us down and making sure that our body still works after the action has taken place. Now, as it turns out, the sympathetic system, the number one neurotransmitter is norepinephrine, which is in part released by your kidneys, your adrenal glands. So we call it sometimes the adrenergic system because it is highly associated with your adrenal glands. On the other hand, the parasympathetic system, the only neurotransmitter that it has is acetylcholine. So sometimes we call it the cholinergic. Choline, acetylcholine, cholinergic. You need to just burn into your head that sympathetic and adrenergic are exactly the same thing. Parasympathetic and cholinergic are exactly the same thing. So if Simon said adrenergic, you would say?
Sympathetic.
Sympathetic. Adrenergic. So, parasympathetic. 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 Cholinergic.
Parasympathetic.
Cholinergic.
Parasympathetic.
Okay, did you remember that from last semester? Because I made you repeat it so many times. Now, repeat it a few more times on your own. When you go home tonight, as you're brushing your teeth, it'll help you remember this. All right, now, the peripheral neurotransmitters. There's only four of them, and one of them doesn't really count. So really, all you have to remember is three things. Isn't that nice? So how many?
Three.
Just like the holy hand grenade. All right, so the first one is acetylcholine. Acetylcholine is responsible for which side of the nervous system? Cholinergic or parasympathetic, which means that the other two must be sympathetic or adrenergic. And then dopamine kind of acts like an adrenergic. We'll talk a little bit about this at the end. All right. So for the cholinergic receptors, things that are activated by acetylcholine, there are three. Gosh, that's very convenient, isn't it? There's three neurotransmitters, and acetylcholine has three receptors. That seems pretty simple, doesn't it? Now, muscarinic, nicotinic M, and nicotinic N are the names of these receptors. Now, on the adrenergic side, there's how many neurotransmitters?
Four.
Neurotransmitters.
Two.
Two. And there's how many receptors?
Four.
Gosh, that's kind of convenient. 2, 4. 6, 8. So they are alpha 1, alpha 2, beta 1, and beta 2. And wasn't that nice that they just gave us two names and we just have to remember numbers after that? So you need to memorize these receptors and neurotransmitters, and then we'll also have to memorize what they do. And it's not enough to just memorize it, then we have to be able to apply it to patients. All right, so here's a little diagram. Here's the parasympathetic nervous system up top, the sympathetic nervous system, and then the somatic. So let's take a look at the somatic first because it is the simplest. What does this represent right here? The spinal cord. And so this little green line is a neuron. And now notice that you go all the way to the end and then you end up at a muscle cell. So it's very simple. There's no synapse until you get to the actual muscle. Now, let's look at the parasympathetic system. You start out in the spinal cord, and you have a neuron, and then you have a... What's a ganglion? I don't know, but it's that thing there. All right, now, do nerves typically travel by themselves, or they travel in packs? In packs. Now, if this was just one neuron, we would call this a synapse. But when you get a whole bunch of them together, all synapsing together, then we call that a ganglion. So a ganglion is nothing more than a collection of synapses. All right, so we have the nerve, then we have a synapse or ganglion, and then we have a second nerve called the postganglionic neuron, which goes to the target organ, which could be smooth muscle cell or it could be a gland. Now the sympathetic nervous system, part of it does exactly the same thing as the parasympathetic. But the other half of it, instead of reaching a synapse with a ganglion, it reaches a synapse with the medulla of the adrenal gland. And then from there, instead of secreting its neuron into a synapse, it secretes its neurotransmitter into the blood. So because it goes into the blood, the neurotransmitter at this point is now considered a hormone. But really, it's a neurotransmitter that just happens to go through blood. So it's a little bit complicated, and we remember we learned things in A&P, and we talk about, you know, nice, you know, this is this and this is that. Well, this is both. So it's both a hormone and a neurotransmitter. Any questions about that? All right. By the way, your book says to memorize this because it will help you to understand what's going on, and I highly recommend that you pay attention to that recommendation. All right. So let's take a look at a little bit more detail. Somatic muscle. We have no ganglion. The neurotransmitter is acetylcholine. And the receptor is nicotinic M. M for muscle. So the only thing the somatic system does is make muscles contract. So therefore, its receptor will be called nicotinic M for muscle. So this is a nicotinic M receptor on the muscle. All right, parasympathetic. The parasympathetic, we come across. We get acetylcholine at the synapse, and then we also get acetylcholine again. Now, at the synapse, what do you think that receptor is going to be called? Nicotinic N. N for neuron. So, nicotinic N is at all the synapses. Every synapse in your body between two neurons has, well, in your peripheral nervous system, has acetylcholine and nicotinic N. Then over here on the organ side, we have muscarinic receptors.